Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to the grind, back to the hustle, back to the nonsense. And since it's Tuesday, it's time for the Out of Sight podcast on the Liberty Ballers Network. I am your host, Adil Royster, host of this fine Vox Media podcast. And we're just going to get right into it. This is the last time. This is the 100% last time I, Adil Royster, noted Keep Ben Simmons defender. I've laid down the sword and I'm just done. This is the last time I'm discussing Ben Simmons rumors on this podcast. Barring an actual trade, I don't want to hear anything else. I don't really want to talk about it anymore. I just want it to be over so that we can move on and get the season underway. And Harrison Grimm, my colleague at Liberty Ballers, he wrote a pair of pieces. One talking about how Ben Simmons no longer wants to be a Sixer, won't be reporting to training camp. That one, and then what a trade to the Minnesota Timberwolves is going to look like, because they have shown the most interest from the jump since this whole thing started. So, Harrison, how are you? How was your Labor Day weekend? Are you just as over and done with this as I am?
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me on. Always great to be here. And it's quite an honor and privilege to be on the podcast, the last podcast in which you tackle the topic that is Ben Simmons. I'm sure it's a bittersweet for you.
This is it. I've defended Ben Simmons. I go back to the old quote from Popeye, I've stands all I can stands. I can't stands no more.
I think that's a good way to describe it. But yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to beat the dead horse that is Ben Simmons at this point. Just the whole topic and everything surrounding him. I think you said it best. It's just kind of exhausting at this point. And you and I are both in group chats where we talk about it often. You know, there's a lot of great minds at Liberty Ballers. And it's really cool hearing what everyone wants, but it's just to the point where it's just repetitive. It feels like it's never going to happen. It's a nightmare that just isn't really ending. And then there's also the social media aspect of it, where now it's not just Sixer fans having polarizing debates. It's the entire NBA.
It almost feels like the whole entirety of the NBA is almost kind of laughing at us a little bit now.
Yeah, I think so. But I guess it's to be expected, because most or the average NBA fan, I should say, doesn't watch Ben Simmons on a regular basis like you or I do. The main thing that they saw was the flameout against Atlanta. And yeah, I mean, if you just look at that in a vacuum, it looks really bad. But it's just gotten to a point where the slander is really out of control. Like, there's people mentioning him in the same breath as Evan Turner. And
stop it.
That's just, it's too far.
It's way too far.
It really is.
Let's start with the whole not reporting to training camp thing. Last week, Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer reported that the Sixers met with Simmons and said, quote, in a meeting with the Sixers last week in L.A., Simmons told co-managing partner Josh Harris, Daryl Morey, Elton Brand, and Doc Rivers he no longer wants to be a Sixer. Also said that the three-time All-Star does not intend to report to training camp. Once that quote came out, I was of the mindset where it's like, okay, he needs to be gone and just make sure his key card to enter the building doesn't work anymore. Like, if that's how he feels, then just rescind everything.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty big turning point in what has kind of unfolded in the past few weeks or months with Ben Simmons. We saw that it was reported that Rich Paul and Ben were both on board with possibly finding a new home. But that's an entirely different thing, an entirely different animal than, you know, saying, I don't want to be here. So when I saw that news happen, it kind of made me concerned that the asking price has already been driven down on him. Obviously, his look after the Atlanta series isn't as good as it was in the past. And
no.
This probably doesn't help, because now teams are going to be like, look, I don't have to help you. I can just leave you with this situation that, you know, isn't going to get better, or doesn't at least look like it right now. So that was my main concern with the news. And to be honest, I kind of thought it would happen sooner than it did. I know everyone's mad at Rich Paul and Clutch for that news and other news that kind of has leaked out, but this probably should have and could have happened earlier than it did. I think Clutch showed some patience with that. And I think it's just gotten to the point where they're kind of putting their foot down and trying to get something moving in terms of a Ben Simmons deal.
And there's no going back now, right? Like, if there's like a 180 degree shift in attitude and Ben shows up at like training camp and is trying to play it all like, oh man, remember that summer? That was weird. That was wild, wasn't it? Like, there's no way he can do that.
I think he can kind of come back in the form of a short-term thing where the Sixers and him are like, listen, you want to go to a specific team. You're not getting there unless you raise your value, play a little bit. But that being said, if something like that does even happen, it is going to be awkward. And let's face it, the media is going to ask questions to every player up and down the roster, along with any Sixers coaches or front office staff. And everyone's just going to get sick of it. So I think that could happen, even though I think it's a little bit of a stretch right now. But yeah, in terms of a long term, like, oh, it's okay, we'll just smooth this over relationship between Ben Simmons and the Sixers, I think it's done.
Every player, every coach, every day, every second, question about how they feel about Ben Simmons being at training camp, given what happened over the summer. Like, I don't think the Sixers want that going into the season. That's just terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, and also, like, the fan aspect of it, you know, fans are really fed up at this point, especially now that Ben Simmons has kind of came out, or at least the report came out, and said, I don't want to be here anymore. So you factor in that with the Atlanta series and the fact that Philly fans are, you know, they'll boo you.
Yes.
I'm sure Ben doesn't want that. And frankly, I don't blame him.
Okay. Talking about the media and the fans and whatnot, I was listening to the Ryan Russillo podcast, and he had Bill Simmons on, and Bill Simmons said something, and it made me feel a little bit upset, but at the same time, just like, yeah, he's kind of right. But we've reached a point where Ben Simmons, if the Philly fans are out on you, they're just out. That's it. And there's just no going back. And that's kind of where I feel that the fan base is right now. Like, I don't think that Simmons can be on the floor of the Wells Fargo Center this season, given what happened this summer. Like, there's no amicable way that the Sixers can sell this to the fan base. There's just not, unless Simmons finally does the thing that we've all asked him to do, which is either A, really, really have a jumper and not like just during grainy video season, but like actually do it on the court. We're all just done with that. Unless you can do that and help us win and have a better attitude, I think the fan base is 1,000% out at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Simmons as a player and topic, even before the Atlanta series, it was a super polarizing topic. You had people that were just out on him complaining that he wasn't shooting and wasn't really appreciating the things that he was doing. And then you have the people that would just praise him to all ends. And there's really no in between. Like, yeah, Ben Simmons does A, B, and C well, but he doesn't do D, E, and F.
Right.
There wasn't really any of that. And now it's to a much larger scale, as I said before, with other fan bases kind of chiming in. But yeah, that's a hard sell to Sixer fans, to, you know, people showing up to games and everything. Like I said, the only thing and the only path that I could see to him wearing a Sixer uniform again is the forum where, and I don't think this would be something that happens like immediately after training camp. It might be like, if you remember with Jimmy Butler and the Timberwolves, or yep, James Harden in Houston, where he was away from the team, that they slowly came back and performed, but it was just awkward. And you know, eventually we all know what happened with those two situations. I think it would be something like that. And even that, I like I said, I think even that's a stretch.
Here's an interesting question as it pertains to fan bases. It's not Philly specific, right? Like, if Ben Simmons goes to another team and has similar struggles, this is something that's going to follow him, and any fan base he plays on is going to get upset / fed up. Am I wrong on thinking that?
I think a new team will help him in some regards, just in the form of, you know, taking away on court or off court fit or anything like that. Just going to a new situation, if you're Ben Simmons, is going to be a breath of fresh air. It's a blank page. It's a new start.
Okay.
So I think in that aspect, it will help. But it's kind of hard to argue that the problems that currently exist with Ben Simmons are going to go away, like, definitively. Yes, he is only 25, I believe, so he still has some room to grow. The book on Ben Simmons hasn't been fully written, at least yet. But it's hard to argue that he'll do better elsewhere. When you look at the Sixers team, and everyone was like, it's catered to be built around Joel and Ben, provide floor spacing. And that's true to an extent, but Joel Embiid, it's pretty easy to play with him. He basically does everything really well. So I would argue more so that this team was built, this was the best team, and you could argue that the Sixers with Robert Covington and Dario Saric were a better built team for Ben. But, you know, Seth Curry, Danny Green, those guys were all brought aboard to make it easy on Ben. And during the regular season, we saw it worked well. You had all above average NBA shooters surrounding him, 2 through 5, with Curry, Green, Harris, and Joel. And there's not many teams like that have that surplus of shooting out there. And maybe with the Timberwolves, you got an all-time great shooter, big man shooter, I should say, in Karl Anthony Towns. So maybe that could help. But I'm not necessarily buying that.
I'm not either, because I think that if you're trading for Ben Simmons, my thought process is, okay, I got this point guard, that I got this power forward that kind of thinks he's a point guard. So, and he doesn't shoot. So pretty much he's my primary big man. And like, I can't have a big man that's there clogging the lane. I got to keep everything open. Like, and it has to be Simmons with as much wide open spacing as possible. And that's really hard to build. Number one, number two, I feel like that's going to be really hard to win with.
Yeah, I think you're right in that regard. And you're right. You have to use Simmons as like kind of a big, but one of the issues that he hasn't really developed in, which has been kind of surprising, at least in my opinion, is like the lack of off ball game. And I'm not just talking about like catch and shooting or what have you. I'm talking about he doesn't really actively set screens in the half court set. He doesn't really slash to the rim off the ball. He just kind of floats in the dunker spot. And, you know, is that just the way Doc Rivers and the Sixers used him, or is that more personal habit, or is it both? You know, you can take your guess at that, but
like he's not doing the yeoman work off ball stuff. And that was just incredibly frustrating because, you know, Ben Simmons is like 6'10", 6'11", 240. Just get in somebody's way. Like that's basically all a screener is. Like you can do that, Benjamin. You can stand here and get in somebody's way and facilitate a drive or an open shot somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's been the most frustrating aspect of it is he's not just like he's not an undersized rim running player. He's not really actively setting screens or what have you. And that's really what has plagued him in the postseason is he just kind of floats around in the dunker spot and that allows a lot easier double teams that we've seen for Joel Embiid or even other players. So it's just tough. You got a player that's really versatile in the form of defender. He's arguably the best perimeter defender in the NBA, obviously a gifted passer, but there's definitely a lot of missing offensive skills that hasn't been added since his rookie season. And there's even been some areas of regression in the form of free throw shooting. So it's really tough. I don't think there's necessarily a seamless fit out there. Like even with the Timberwolves, I think they're one of the better fitting teams.
It's still kind of messy.
It is. It really is.
We have to talk about Rich Paul. We have to talk about clutch boards. We have to, we just have to, because that's another frustrating / anger inducing part to this whole thing. It was rough. It was, I thought it was funny, but you know, whatever. I pretty much said that Rich Paul is the worst thing to happen to the NBA since the cocaine epidemic of the early 80s, late 70s. And it's not even close. It's not even close. I 1000% believe that. And it just goes to show in this situation how A, clutch sports really overplayed their hand, and B, how they have all this feeling of like fake leverage. I don't think they had any real leverage in the situation. Did you?
I really don't think they do, and I haven't really thought otherwise. I mean, you look at Ben's situation, he has 4 years on his contract. It's not like an Anthony Davis thing where they can be like, hey, you trade for him, we're not going to re-sign here. If you tell that to any team right now, they're going to laugh in your face and be like, well, we'll revisit that in 4 years. And 4 years in the NBA, that's a pretty long time.
And then the report that they said that they wanted maxing the deal and have all their clients out of Philly, which has since then been debunked, correct?
Yeah, there is Kendrick Perkins of all people, our number one trusted source, Kendrick Perkins. He came out and said it, you know, it's BS. And while it is Kendrick Perkins and he's kind of a meme, he is someone that kind does of? Have okay, he is a meme.
Thank you.
He did come out and
it's on his business card.
Yes. And he's like an unofficial spokesperson for Clutch. So you know where it's coming from with, you know, without him actually saying it. He was like, this is BS, it's not true. So it was shot down, but it's definitely an eyebrow raiser to say the least. I think it's something that you can kind of brush off a little bit, but I would definitely keep it in the back of your mind just in case whatever unfolds in the next few years with Maxi and whatever extension he signs in Philly or elsewhere.
1000%. When I read it, I said, okay, that's effed up. Like, why is Tyrese Maxi out here catching strays due to a beef that has nothing to do with him? And then it was disproven by Kendrick Perkins of all people. But now in the back of my head, I'm like, do I really think that wasn't a thing? Do I really think that Clutch is not capable of doing something that dirty? No, I don't think they are. I think that is still kind of a possibility.
Like agents moving their clients or preferring other teams for their clients is a very real thing. Agents and front offices develop relationships, and you kind of saw that. A really good recent example was JJ Redick in New Orleans, yep. where he was going to get bought out, and he was on board with it, and the team was like, "We're just going to buy you out." And then all of a sudden, it's like, "Hey, we shipped you to Dallas," which is not where he wanted to go at all. And he's partnered with CAA, which is one of the bigger MBA agencies. They have a lot of popular clients, and he went out and was like, "Listen, like everyone from CAA, we're not going to negotiate with New Orleans and their current front office." And that's a big deal because Zion Williamson, mm-hmm. their franchise player, is also alongside with them. So these things do happen. The thing that surprised me about that report, and you can argue whether or not it's legitimate or not, that's entirely your opinion. But what shocked me the most was how public it was, because,
yes.
like I said, these things happen behind closed doors more so than I think people originally do think. But it's never to the public scale that report was. So that was the most shocking thing for me. And you kind of saw, you know, whether it's true or not, like I said, that's entirely your opinion and such. But you kind of saw damage control the next morning with Kendrick Perkins being like, "This is BS, carry on," you know?
And I'll say this about Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, and then I'm just going to move on because I'm just going to get more and more angry and frustrated. They're only a thing because LeBron James is their biggest client. That's it. If it wasn't for LeBron James, Rich Paul and Clutch Sports would not be a thing. I'm of the mindset that if your name isn't LeBron James or Anthony Davis, they're not going to go to bat for you as hard as they would if your name is LeBron James or Anthony Davis. I don't really see any other Clutch agents. I don't see any other Clutch clients getting super touted. I mean, sure, Lonzo got paid from Chicago, but when you look up and down the roster, like they're mid-level guys, they're not out here, you know, pounding the sand for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or anything.
Yeah, or another good example was Marcus Morris, who agreed to, I forget, it was either the San Antonio Spurs or Clippers, and then he completely just went away from that, and all of a sudden it was like, "Hey, I'm going to New York," which was kind of an eyebrow raiser back then, and even more so now.
Last thing about Clutch Sports. The Nerlens Noel thing, that's a thing that is happening. And if it comes out that Clutch screwed Nerlens out of a whole bunch of money, I feel like a lot of college basketball players are going to be looking real hard at this group going forward. And also, if I'm another agency like CAA or something like that, I'm calling up Anthony Edwards. I'm calling the mid-level younger guys on their roster and be like, "Hey, do you really want to be affiliated with this group after what they just did with the Ben Simmons mess and Tyrese Maxey and then the Nerlens stuff? You really want to be affiliated with that group? Or do you want to come over with us? We have, in the case of CAA, like a proven track record with not just basketball clients, sports and entertainment clients." Like, they cross every market possible, CAA does.
Yeah, I think that a lot of agents do, and I forget who reported it or else I would cite it, but someone reported that there's kind of a cheering or, you know, positivity shared by other agencies and agents within the NBA when that Nerlens lawsuit came out. Because I think Clutch is one of the biggest agencies in the NBA. They have some of the biggest names, headlining names. So I do think that there's some animosity towards them.
Yes.
And you know, apparently if Rich Paul is out here tampering and kind of stealing it, players and clients away from other agents and everything, I definitely think that, you know, depending on whatever happens with this lawsuit, I think agents and agencies are going to be kind of circling the situation that is Clutch and all of their clients that aren't LeBron James or Anthony Davis or any of the established guys that are currently the headliners in the NBA.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break real quick, regather our thoughts a little bit, decompress, calm down a little bit, because I can just feel the anger boiling in me right now. So I'm going to step away for a second, and we'll be right back, and we'll get into, Harrison, what is a Ben Simmons to Minnesota trade? What's it going to look like at this point? Back in a second.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Okay. So now that we've discussed the backstory, what is a Ben Simmons trade going to look like? Minnesota seems to be the popular destination here. When the trade rumors and everything first started swirling, I thought that we could possibly get, you know, Dame Lillard, something like that. But like now, when it comes to Minnesota, I don't even know if we can get D'Angelo Russell, which is weird. And you were messing around with the trade machine, and let's just go to you. What right now, what does a Minnesota for Ben Simmons trade look like?
So there's two clear-cut options, and these are entirely based off of the reports that have been public for a while, all the information that's out there. And the basis that Karl Anthony Towns is not going to be in a deal, even if he was, his fit with Joel would be clunky or very weird.
Al Horford, but worse somehow, maybe better. I don't know.
Yeah, it would be strange. The Twin Towers theme and the year 2021 doesn't really work.
No, not at all.
At least full time. But it's on the basis that Karl Anthony Towns isn't going to be in the deal, and Minnesota is unwilling to trade Anthony Edwards, which I understand from their standpoint. He had a really solid rookie year, and apparently he's grown 2 inches, so that doesn't hurt either.
Of course not.
Yeah. So there's two packages that really make sense, kind of from a salary standpoint.
Only that one. We're just doing salary. We're not giving a crap about fit or anything like that.
Listen, I've given up on creating mock trades because people will quote tweet it. You'll have one person that'll be like, this is highway robbery for Philly. And then there'll be someone else that comes out and be like, listen, like the Sixers are getting nothing in this deal. And you know, making mock trades is just impossible. You can't please everyone. So disclaimer out of the way, the first real package that they can do is D'Angelo Russell, and I don't see much appeal in this, so I won't talk about it too much. D'Angelo Russell, I think he's a fine player. There's definitely a group out there in the world that views him as a really, really good player for some reason. And like, listen, I don't mean to bash D'Angelo Russell. I think he's fine. Like what he did in Brooklyn, that was really cool.
He's fine. He's okay. He's a fine guard.
Exactly. And he's on a max contract. If he wasn't on a max contract, I would probably like him more. But yeah. the fact that he isn't a good defender, the fact that he really isn't a good finisher around the rim. He's really only a perimeter oriented scorer. The biggest fact out of all those is the fact that he hasn't really been healthy for 2 years. He's played about half the games between that year where he was on Golden State and Minnesota, and then last year where he was exclusively on Minnesota. The guy hasn't remained healthy. So I'm not interested in pairing another fringe all-star guy with Joel Embiid that can't really stay healthy. And we've seen him once in the postseason, and Ben Simmons completely shut him down for four games after that game one in that first round series.
Yep.
A few years back. So not too interested in D'Angelo Russell. I know some people really are. I know some people really aren't. I'm much more interested in the second package in which Minnesota can cobble together. And that's the form of Malik Beasley and Jaden McDaniels. For those who are unfamiliar with Malik Beasley, speaking strictly as an on the court player, he is really talented. He averaged 20 points per game, albeit in limited games for the past 2 years in Minnesota. He's one of the better shooters in the NBA. Pull up, catch and shoot. He's able to score from the perimeter. He's on a much fairer contract than D'Angelo Russell in the $15 million range. The main concerns that arise from him aren't on the court stuff necessarily. It's all off the court stuff. He's had some legal issues that shouldn't be overlooked. So that's kind of an issue with him. And then you go to Jaden McDaniels, who's a lot younger. He's only 20 years old. He's coming off of a really, really solid rookie year. And he's someone that can be a multi-positional defender. He's not really there yet, but I think with his athleticism and length, he can get there.
Another one of those Thibault-type players?
Sort of. I would argue that he's a better shooter and offensive player, or he at least can be, than Thibault. What he kind of reminds me of a little bit, and this might be a little bit of a stretch, but putting it into terms that Sixers fans can understand, he's kind of like a Robert Covington. He's kind of a streaky shooter at times, but he can really shoot. Not really an off the dribble scorer, but he is a tremendous defender and a really good rim protector too. So the only issues with Jaden McDaniels would be the fact that he's 20 years old, doesn't line up with Joel Embiid's timeline of winning in the next 2, 3, or maybe even 4 years. And then you would have to throw in one of Patrick Beverley or Torian Prince, and both of those guys can't be traded until October. So you're probably not going to get a Minnesota deal done right now, unless you're finding a third team for D'Angelo Russell, and it would be really, really advanced, and there would be a lot of moving parts.
D'Angelo Russell is the guy that best fits the Joel Embiid timeline. So I'm in on that just simply because Russell can help a lot more right now. And I think that you can kind of sell that return to the fans. Does that make sense?
I mean, maybe, yeah. I personally would be really underwhelmed by a D'Angelo Russell package unless they were literally throwing every draft pick back at the Sixer with like 3 or 4 first round picks and a bunch of swaps.
Right, but the problem is Minnesota doesn't have any.
Yeah, like, D'Angelo Russell, I'm just so, like, I'm so exhausted about talking about D'Angelo Russell. Like, there's so many deals, and I've seen a bunch of people, like I said, it's a very polarizing thing. People love him, people hate him, but, like, the Sixers can just do so much better than him. If they need a win-now guard, like, just go get Malcolm Brogdon, who's earning less and is a much better defender and probably player than D'Angelo Russell, at least right now. Or even, I think you're better off going with the CJ McCollum deal over D'Angelo Russell. But yeah, you know, that's a great point you brought up. The Sixers kind of have to go on this line of, okay, we want assets if Damian Lillard or another star becomes available.
Right.
To pair with Joel Embiid. But at the same time, you can't just do a draft pick oriented deal because you're essentially punting away another season of Joel Embiid's prime, and that's not good. So it's a really, really tough line for the Sixers to walk on. I think the Minnesota deal is so interesting in the aspect of it seems like they're willing to give up draft compensation, which I think draft picks from a team that has historically struggled in recent years, I think that's really attractive, especially if there's light protections on some of those picks. But headlining a package of you're sending away three-time All-Star Ben Simmons for Malik Beasley, who has had off-court issues and hasn't really done too much in the NBA, that's a tough sell.
And it Beasley's criminal dealings, he was arrested for marijuana possession, concealing stolen property, and brandishing a firearm. This was September 2020. So, I mean, granted, any criminal activity is not great, but at least it's not in the realm of like domestic violence, sexual assault, that kind of stuff. So it's like, it's not good, but it's not completely abhorrent either.
Yeah, I think it's something that you should just take into consideration if you're Daryl Morey. But at the same time, you know, people can learn from their mistakes. People grow, they mature. So there's also that aspect of it too. You're right.
We always see the asking price for Ben Simmons when trades are discussed and Daryl gives his asking price. Are we at the point now where we really have to be prepared for like a 60 cents on the dollar trade or even less just to fix the situation? Like, I know Daryl's not that kind of GM that does that kind of thing, but is it something we should really be getting like mentally prepared for?
I don't think the Sixers are going to do a deal that puts them in a worse spot. And what I mean by that is I don't think they're going to go out just to trade Ben Simmons for Malcolm Brogdon and like a handful of picks. I don't think that's likely. Even though I love Malcolm Brogdon,
love Malcolm Brogdon. It's a little bit ridiculous, Harrison. I'm just letting you know.
I'm the captain of the Malcolm Brogdon train.
He may just show up to the giant SB Nation party on September 25th. Cheap plug. wearing a Malcolm Brogdon jersey. That might just be happening.
I might have to. But yeah, going back to the question at hand, like Daryl Morey isn't just going to do a deal. I think this thing might get even more uglier than what we've seen. I know Clutch and Rich Paul and everyone from that side are going to do everything they can to resolve it before training camp in the season. But let's face it, we talked about Rich Paul and Ben Simmons not having any leverage with his contract, but Ben Simmons can be fined roughly $250,000 every time he doesn't show up to training camp every day. So he can lose over $1 million if he just doesn't show up to training camp. And I'm not entirely buying that an NBA player who is approaching his prime, so he's having some of his best years, his body is at peak levels, is really going to forfeit over millions of dollars. Yeah. Like that. I don't know.
It's like, Ben, you want to check this week? Then you might want to show up.
Exactly. And if you're Ben Simmons, like, why make this situation even more grim? Like, the reason Ben Simmons hasn't been moved is because his asking price and his value is at an all-time low, and the Sixers want to capitalize. Why would you ruin your value even more if you're trying to leave Philadelphia? Why wouldn't you try and do everything you can to raise your value so you can raise your chances of going to a team or situation that you like?
Right. And not like it's the same situation because they're not the same player at all. But like, we all know how good James Harden is. But at the same time, it helped his value a little bit to help make the trade out of Houston easier. Like, why? I don't know why Ben and Clutch, I don't know why they don't understand that.
Yeah, I think that helped it. And yeah, I've seen a lot of people compare those two situations. And And you can argue that trading for Ben Simmons has more appeal than James Harden did. We've seen, even though that James Harden is an MVP and one of the greatest offensive scorers in NBA history, there wasn't a massive market for him. It was essentially Brooklyn and Philly and a little bit of Miami bidding for him. And we're talking about a 30-point-per-game guy in his prime, essentially, or right, at least coming out of it. Ben Simmons, he's 25. He's going to have his best years ahead of him, at least on paper. He's under contract for the next 4 years. I think there's appeal to, especially to smaller markets like Sacramento or Cleveland or Minnesota, where you have a three-time All-Star approaching the best days of his career, that you will probably not have a chance to land a player of his caliber in free agency. So I think this opportunity is a lot more attractive than it's being painted to be. And obviously all those teams are trying to capitalize on the fact that his value's at rock bottom, as they should be. But I think there's a resolution in the mess that is the Ben Simmons trade saga somewhere.
Well, let's hope that comes soon, because training camp is right around the corner, and this just needs to be over. This needs to be done, and we're just over and done talking about thinking about the whole situation, and like that's just it.
Oh yeah, it was fun at first. Like, it was like, hey, what can we get for Ben Simmons? And now it's just like we're talking about the same things. And I saw in the Liberty Ballers chat, I think it was Steve Littman, shout out him.
It was probably Steve.
God bless him. He brought up, he was like, how do we feel about Colin Sexton? And that sparked a whole conversation. So
let me just answer that for everybody let me just answer that for everybody listening to this podcast network. Steve, no, that's the answer. No on Colin Sexton. Absolutely not. Harrison Grimm, appreciate you coming on and just getting this last Ben Simmons therapy session, just getting it done. Appreciate you coming on. You can follow Harrison on Twitter at Harrison_Grimm. That's Grimm with two M's. And Harrison, love your work. Love talking to you. I'll speak to you soon, my friend.
Thank you for having me on, and let's hope this situation resolves itself sooner rather than later.
Oh my God. Everything crossed. Fingers, toes, eyes, everything. Talk to you soon, Harrison.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.